What's up, y'all? Welcome to the Sports Medicine Broadcast, Learning to Move as a Healthcare Provider. My guest this week is my buddy Sean Reedy. Sean is nursing a sore throat, the wonderful pollen that is everywhere. I can't even like roll down my windows right now without stuff falling in my car. So like you want to be outside, but then when you come inside, your throat is hurting and your eyes are red. But it is what it is. It's part of the new life. So my boy Sean Reedy is here. He's going to be talking about learning how to move as a healthcare provider. So please bear with his little bit of a scratchy voice. I'm your host, Jeremy Jackson, hosting the Sports Medicine Broadcast, which yesterday when I looked at the stats, total downloads are over 200,000 total downloads in the last 3.5 years. So 200,000 total downloads in the last 3.5 years, and that's awesome. And again, I know I said something on Twitter. I don't think my mom downloaded 200,000 episodes, and then Mike Hopper chimed in saying, you know, that's why his hard drive is so full, but whatever it is, there's 200,000 downloads of the Sports Medicine Broadcast. So that is awesome. And I also looked at the stats, and there's well over 13,000 that have been from like the United Kingdom, and there's all sorts of several different other countries where it's being downloaded as well. So thank you for helping us reach 200,000 downloads on the Sports Medicine Broadcast. This episode is sportsmedicinebroadcast.com/learningtomove. Again, learning to move, because we're talking to Sean Reedy about learning to move as a healthcare provider. All right, Sean, obviously you and I have talked before about working out, about doing things, about being active, about demonstrating it to your patient. I went over there today and used the slingshot from Mark Bell that you lent me, and I'm moving. I demonstrate stuff with the students. I move. I enjoy moving. I'm just a doer, right? So what do you mean when you say, as healthcare providers, we need to learn how to move?
First off, Jeremy, I want to congratulate you on the 200. That's awesome. Or 200,000. That's awesome. That just shows what you guys, what you're doing for our profession and for athletic training. And that's, I mean, it's really cool. And I know that getting to know you and getting to like actually see what all goes into what you do here is an awesome deal. But learning to move as a healthcare provider, or learning to move for those that teach movement, to me is understanding not only the biomechanics, understanding not only the single joint. We are so single joint dominant in athletic training, in sometimes even physical therapy, that we turn into where we're just hitting that one joint, where we're forgetting ourselves how we move. I've been to so many different conferences and just places where I'm with fellow athletic trainers, and I'm looking at postures and I'm judging movement patterns and I'm looking at knee valgus and foot pronation. And I know that you preach this. I know that you preach this to your student athlete. I know that you are talking about dropping that knee. I know that you're talking about that foot pronation. I know that you're talking about all of these different things when you're doing your rehab with your student athlete. But the one issue that I see there is, why aren't we doing it with ourselves? And especially because think of the hours that we stand up over a table. Think of the hours that we stand over our athletes, working on them, doing manual therapies, doing in the college settings, in clinic settings, dry needling, doing manual therapy, doing any where that's in any setting. We're doing stretching where you're putting yourself in a vulnerable position to where you can cause injury later on in life, as well as cause issues that you might not be able to work now. And now certain places have, all right, if you are injured and you have to take off work, we'll give you time. But what if you have to be out for 6 months? What if you have to be out for a long time because you've had a disc injury, or you've had a pretty severe injury, an ACL tear? We've all been to the NATA. We've all been to some conference where you see the athletic trainer walking around in a boot or walking around on crutches or some position like that. So it's not only a mindset to me of, excuse me, of learning how to move so that we can teach movement, but learning how to move so we can protect ourselves and so that we can prevent ourselves from becoming injured and prevent ourselves from getting into a bad movement pattern.
All right. Just like any athletic trainer would say, you know, teachers are the worst students, doctors are the worst patients. We as athletic trainers are in a similar situation, right? We are often too busy taking care of, or, you know, I hear athletic trainers talking about, well, I've got to do all this paperwork and I teach three different classes, sports medicine or health or PE or whatever it is. And so we just don't make time to take care of ourselves. And that's part of what you're saying is taking time to take care of ourselves, but doing it correctly. So like when we bend over to pick up that cooler, bending with our knees and making sure we're not doing it incorrectly. Is that kind of what I'm understanding?
Yes. Okay. Looking at perfect squat form, looking at having that perfect squat form, having that perfect movement, having that good hinge. Now that we're in athletic trainers in the majority and should be moving more so, should be going to the medical model, correct? And because of us going to the medical model, we have to show an understanding to the athlete and then to the doctor. So we not only have to speak medicine, but we have to speak basic kinesiology, basic understanding of movement to someone that might not understand movement. So talking about in a squat rotation, talking knee rotation, hip rotation, where, you know what, I might not talk about actual rotation, but I might talk about driving the knee out or driving in at knee position or keeping a proper knee position or using your butt or all of these different cues that dependent upon my athlete, dependent upon the movement, dependent upon what I see that I'm looking at is an issue. These are the things that we need to be able to assess better, as well as we need to be able to assess in ourselves. And once we can assess them in ourselves, and once we start playing, literally playing, getting out and playing. And I know you said, talking about a lot of athletic trainers have a lot of time that they are working on their classes, on their teaching, on the homework from that class, on potentially homework of their own because they're going to school or they're trying to take a certification online or they're trying to take a class online or they're just trying to better themselves. Plus the time that we're in the athletic training room, plus the time that we're in out at practice, all of these times, we've got a lot of irons in the fire, if you know what I mean. But we've got to work on, one, there's a lot of research out there talking about exercise and movement and health, obviously, but also where your mental capacity is and where your mentality is and how you cope with things due to exercise. Those that exercise are able to handle more stress, are able to handle more in their job. They're able to let things roll off their shoulders. They don't blow up so quickly. Exercise is helpful in all forms. So in the roundabout way of it, you are actually hitting everything. You're helping your athlete. You're helping yourself. You're creating a better life for yourself. And you're helping those around you because you might not be as moody. You might not have the attitude. And that's the basics of learning to move. For those that teach movement, to me, is what you have to go off of, is being able to move in a proper form, being able to get out and do things, being active, staying active, and keeping yourself at that high level of where you know that we're keeping our athletes and we're keeping those that we're training.
So you're talking about getting out and competing. I know Megan McKay, when I talked with her, she said she's in a sand volleyball league where just friends she knows that, I think it's Tuesday nights or whatever, they're going out to play volleyball. So she's moving, she's getting out, moving, being active. Now, just over spring break, I went and played top golf.
Mm-hmm.
And I play golf probably once a year when somebody pays for it, right? So I might go to the driving range or I'll go in the backyard and hit golf balls with my kids, the little wiffle balls. And so obviously it's not quite the same, but man, I was super sore after playing top golf, but I was out there doing something. And I think part of the reason is like I listen to people about how to play golf. And so I know, you know, you bring it back slowly, you keep your eyes on the ball, you keep your feet still, you stay balanced, you got to shift the weight and swing through, follow through with the club, all this stuff that I know in my head, but I haven't practiced it enough. So by the end of the hour that we were playing at Topgolf, like I felt like I was really able to just swing and connect because I had, I had warmed up and kind of honestly tired myself out because I'm a strong, kind of a strong guy. And so it's normal for me to just try and muscle up and hit a golf ball. Whereas in golf, you can't do that. You just have to swing. And so I was just wondering how that kind of relates, besides the fact that I was out playing and, you know, being healthy, but just the learning to move, maybe sometimes needing to break bad habits by getting exhausted. I don't know.
That's something that to me too is something that we all have to do, because we assess our athlete every time we do it. So talking about golf, I'm not a golfer. I do the exact same thing. I'll golf once in a while when somebody gives me a free round when I was at Rice, or when, you know, we're a couple of my buddies are like, hey, this is really cheap on our college campus, let's go. And it's like $5. I'm not going to pay much more than $5 right. to go golfing because I don't know how to do it. But that's a great assessment tool. And that's something that's a great idea of what exactly I'm talking about, because all right, my movement pattern in golf is terrible, but you are assessing your movement pattern. Now, is that exactly what, you know, in the long run we're saying, or I'm saying? No, but you've taken it so far past there already by saying, I'm going to try and make my pattern in golf the best it can be while I'm doing it. I'm going to take all the education that I've gotten from, whether it be YouTube, podcasts, whatever, that you've listened to about form, function, movement of golf, and I'm going to address that. And then I'm going to try and assess myself while doing it. And that's where I get to. So let's break down something simple as a squat. Very simple movement, okay. Most people would think. How many people get patellar tendonitis? How many people start to have knee problems? How many people complain about depth in squat? How many people complain about issues with their squat? How many people can actually functionally do a good squat? That is a movement that, when I think about assessment, that's a huge thing. Talking about the FMS, talking about any movement screen that we do, we are so good at movement screens. We are so good at screening an athlete. But then when we try it as a athletic trainer, as a specialist, sometimes we're terrible at it. And that's where we need to develop, and we need to take that time, get out, exercise, spend some time doing movements, and learn what those movements are. Over the last few years, I've went from having, you know, general knee pain that people have as an athlete to, you know, I don't have knee pain anymore when I squat, because I've completely changed my squat. And I did that by assessing my squat. Now, I've done that with different ways. I've done that by dropping my weight. I've done that by setting up a camera and watching, using something like we talked about on the one podcast about like the coach's eye, using that, slowing it down, putting angles in there, and assessing myself. Because I feel like if I can assess myself, I can assess an athlete, and I can develop an athlete into, or I can help them into a better athlete if I'm a better athlete because of it. And when I can watch myself and teach myself to do something better, then I should definitely be able to do it with an athlete. And that in general is what we need to do, is we need to watch ourselves move. That's a perfect example with golf, because you watch yourself move. You felt how you felt in your swing. You felt the movement pattern. You felt, now you've got all these different cues coming in, because all right, one place tells you to stay on your back foot, or again, I don't know golf, but stay on one foot in comparison to the other. Keep a straighter arm. Continue to watch the ball. All of these different movements that now you're trying to cram into this hour session of, I'm trying to hit the golf ball and be successful and hit it into the spot where I'm supposed to be hitting it. That's exactly what we're supposed to be doing. But we should break it down on the most basic primal level of moving, because that's what we're teaching in hinging, in pressing, in squatting, in stepping, in lunging, in all of these movements that we do and that we coach and that we teach and that we push them to the field doing. These are the things that we should be able to assess. These are the things that we should be able to do ourselves, which again is going to make us healthy, is going to put us in a better position to understand what they're going through, and is also going to put us in developing a better program for them. Because now, as a professional, as an athlete ourselves, everybody's an athlete. Back in the Paleolithic period, when you were trying to hunt for your food, you had to be an athlete. Guess what? Most athletic trainers were athletes or really enjoyed sports enough that they wanted to be around it. And I, listening to y'all's podcast about it was one of the board members from here in Pasadena, correct? And he called your students athletes. They're mm-hmm. athletes. Everyone's an athlete. For us to survive as a human in the human race, we are all athletes. We just have to start doing athletic things. And the more athletic we become as a person, as an athletic trainer, the better we're going to be able to train our athletes and our students. And these are the things that we're going to be able to do better. And these are the ways we're going to be able to understand it better. And then we're also going to be able to bring it back to our doctors, our people that don't understand what that athlete needs, and say, you know, I need a lot more hip drive out of them in their bag, driving a bag off the defensive line, or in their power clean. You know what, doc? Honestly, I don't think that they need to be released fully because they're not getting a full pull out of their power clean or their power snatch. They're short pulling. They're not we can't release them because of this. And we're going to understand it better because we've done it, because we've put serious time in of putting it towards ourselves.
So just a real quick interruption. That was sportsmedicinebroadcast.com/technology. And we talked about Coach's Eye or Huddle. They have a slow-mo video recording app, and it actually helps you analyze the technique. So again, that's sportsmedicinebroadcast.com/technology where he referenced there. And then completely different topic, but when you were talking about Fred Roberts, the school board member, and just this week, they had a school board reelection campaign kickoff party. And so I was like, well, I'm going to go to that. Because when I talked to Scott Galloway and Chris Shattuck, they said, you know, you have to kind of be a politician. So I went to that thing. I shook hands with one of the guys and was like, hey, man, happy birthday. Because my birthday was last week, and we're friends on Facebook, so he saw me. So he saw my face. He said he recognized me there, even though I haven't really ever met him outside of that. But now he does. He knows, athletic trainer Jeremy came to support us, that kind of thing. Again, this is completely different. But then, I talked to Fred Roberts again. He's like, hey, we were just talking about you guys this morning and all the work you guys do as athletic trainers. So just thanks. And again, had he not been over here on the podcast, he would not have been, as open or willing to say that to me. So that doesn't completely fit with the topic. However, it was something that cool that happened that I've learned from the podcast. So again, it's about getting out and doing things that aren't normal, which is what we're talking about here for some of us, as me and Sean are both sitting here in a chair right now, kind of leaning forward, knowing that that's bad for our posture and that's bad for our low back. You know, right now I can kind of feel it tightening up. So then I open up my hip flexors a little bit, because I've learned through moving that if I sit with my knees close to my chest, that it makes my hip flexors tight and cause low back pain. And so then I know, like, oh, I can start to feel it tighten up, open up right there as we're sitting here talking. So, and then recently, I'm not sure if I said it on the podcast or not, I was pretty excited about it, but I benched 300 pounds 2 weeks ago for the first time. So Sean's lending me his slingshot. And so I've been able to use that and work out. But again, I'm working out, I'm lifting weights, I'm moving. So just in case you didn't think you could bench 300 pounds by the time you're 35, which I'm now 36, go for it, give it a shot. All right. Now, back to that. Oh, that brings me to the perfect thing. So we've got some athletic trainers. Say somebody is 35 years old, athletic trainer, and they used to play sports, but they've gotten away from it because they've been busy. Where do they start? Where do they start learning to move?
The biggest thing is we all know how to move. We all know what to look for. Now, some of our assessments might not be as good. I'm not ever going to say somebody isn't, but what we really have to do is we have to be able to just learn the basics. Like I said, squat, press, lunge, step, those type of movements. Now start doing it. Start feeling it. Start feeling how you feel when doing these movements. Start feeling what you're doing. There's a lot of different places you can go to move. You can go to your gym. You can go to your training center that you have. Like you said, you just benched 300 pounds. We're now working to three wheels, right?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
You work out here at the school, you're able to do that. Most athletic trainers that work in a school setting, that's probably the case. They have a very good ability to work out there, to train there, to try and become better athletes. Start it out. Now, do you not know what you're doing? Most of us are probably going to. Most are probably going to at least have a bare minimum background of, I know I can get out and I can do something. But there's a lot of different things out there too. There's the CrossFits. There's the Orange Theories. And do these places teach you great movement? No, they don't. But that's where, as the professional that we are, the liability has to come on you and me, because what I know as a movement, I would consider myself movement professional, movement specialist, is that if I see something or I feel something that feels wrong, I'm doing it wrong. I need to figure it out. And that's where I've developed like my movements and how I want my athletes to move, is because I felt things in my foot and realized I'm pronating and realized I'm getting knee drop, or realized I'm getting in a vulnerable position. And I've realized that, you know what, my knee is in front of my toe, or I'm in more of a vertical shin position. And I understand now that I'm getting into these positions where I don't hurt. Now, there are a lot of great references, though, too. Perform Better does a great, I think, three-day training summit is what they call it. And what they do is they'll have some of the best people in the world there. Gray Cook, who did the FMS, and many different people through the NSCA, and some are even athletic trainers that teach movement and teach us how to train our athletes. Now, is it somewhat more of a training position for possibly strength coaches and coaches? Yes, you could say that. But what are we? We're that hybrid. Like I said, we're in that medical model. We should be moving to that medical model more, but we have to still be able to make that understanding to those coaches and speak that coach's language, so that we're not spitting out a whole bunch of fancy words to them and saying, your athlete's hurt, they're going to be out for 6 months, or they're going to be out for 6 weeks. This is what's wrong. We have to be able to talk to them. We have to be able to talk to a doctor. We have to then be able to talk to an athlete and rehab that athlete, and rehab that athlete in more of a functional way. So those are the ways that I would say do that. Me personally, I would say just start moving on your own. Get out and say, I'm going to, one, better myself, and two, start assessing my movements. Start assessing what I do. How does my squat look? All right, everybody makes fun of the CrossFits and the power lifters and the people videotaping their selves while they're lifting or while they're moving. But to me, I honestly will break something down. I know some of my good buddies that are strength coaches or work in performance, they do the same thing. They break every movement of theirs down. What can I do better? Just like going back to that golf swing. How much easier would it have been to see what you were doing wrong with that golf swing, especially with technology that we have today? Some of the greatest Olympic weightlifting coaches can just spot things because they've watched it so much. So many times they've watched somebody pull a weight off the ground in a clean or in a snatch. But are we that good? Can we see that? Can we feel that in ourselves? No. So why not videotape it? Throw it on Instagram if you want to. Somebody else will probably assess it. Now, I wouldn't recommend listening to everybody that's going to assess you on Instagram or on social media, but you'll actually be able to see the difference. You'll see that slow motion. You can pull it down to slow motion. You can use that app and you can slow it down, and then start working into it and get excited about doing it. Get excited about going to a three-day functional training deal where all you're going to do is basically do exercise, because that's part of what we do, is One, how many times have you gotten asked, how do I lose weight? Or how do I, you know, gain a little weight? Or how do I get healthier? Or how do I, because we all get asked those because our profession is confused with personal training and with other things. But we are a hybrid. We are trying to look out for these overweight athletes or these underweight athletes or these bad movers. The bad movers, to me, is the big thing. And if we can pick out a bad mover and be able to assess a bad mover, we're going to be better and we're going to do things better. And we're going to be able to do better for ourselves because we can assess ourselves and because we can assess them. So those are ways to start. Now, I know that that class is...
Jump in real quick. Something I saw when I was at the PE teacher conference is a little Chrome add-on. It's called Move It. So if you install that, you can actually set it so that it'll say every 5 minutes, it'll kind of flash and like kind of take over your screen and say, all right, get up. And this one right here, the example says hop from your left foot to right foot for 10 seconds. It may say jumping jacks or push-ups or walk or whatever. So just something like that, just saying move in general, that would be a really good reminder. And then something else I thought about is, as you're talking about learning to squat, every time you have a kid with an ACL, do the initial rehab with them. They can't do full squats. They shouldn't be doing jump squats and the things that are more complicated and maybe maybe you're not able to do. But if you do that basic squat where you're squeezing a volleyball between your knees so that your knees don't wobble and you're learning stability there, that seems like a really good way to make sure you're doing it and to kind of assess yourself, because you're saying, here, watch me. And so you're thinking about it, you're doing it, and it just another excuse for moving rather than, all right, we'll go over there and do some squats. Well, no, here, look, let's do these together. You watch me and then I'm gonna watch you.
I absolutely love it. The move it deal, I want to look into that, because I know my girlfriend, she has Katie, she's got the one of the fancier watches, not the iWatch, but one of them that pops up, and every once in a while she says at work it tells her to get up and move.
Yeah.
And it's a great option. It's something good for us because we get in this position of slouched down in a forward head over a keyboard. That's why so many times I used to have a standing desk and I loved it because I'm so antsy and so moving that I can't sit too much anyway. But going back to the learning, teaching somebody to squat, that's the perfect position. That's a perfect example. In an ACL, you should be doing it with them because you should be able to show them exactly what you want. And I can tell you, I've had so many athletes tell me, I'll never be able to do that on my movement patterns, where they absolutely will be able to do that once I get done teaching them and once they get done learning how to move correctly. The one thing with the squat, like for an ACL, in a ACL injury for me, is that I'm going to teach them and they're going to know my cueing before they even go into surgery. And they're going to know exactly what I'm going to do before they go, because they're going to have done it for the 2 weeks prior to that surgery. Now, I don't mean anything by this, but with the ball, have you ever thought of keeping them without a ball? Because that ball actually, by keeping them pressing, it makes them want to drive their knees in. And if you keep them and put them into a position where they want to drive their knee out, such as with a band, or teaching them to turn the foot into the ground, not actually turning the foot on the ground, but pretending like they're trying to turn their foot on a paper plate. And as they turn that foot into the ground, that gets that slight external rotation, which actually engages the glute. And by engaging that glute and turning on the glute muscle, makes them get into that down position, squat position, without dropping that knee and getting those adductors firing, because that neurological, I'm trying to squeeze that ball to keep my knees straight while also squatting, then turns them into a, now I know that I got to squeeze to squat. So that's just a different to me, that's just a different mindset of that's how I've now taught myself to squat, lunge, move, is I put my foot in the ground, I turn it because I want the stable base under me. I want my toes straight ahead. I don't want external rotation. I want my toes straight ahead, and I want that knee turned some slightly externally rotated, or that leg slightly externally rotated, to where I'm driving those knees out and I'm turning my butt on. And that's every time that I squat with a new patient, I'm squatting with them. And they might not be able to get down there, except that because I'm sitting there and I'm actually holding on to their hands while they're in that position. And almost turning it into a game then of how close can you get your feet together? How close are you able to squat and get to full depth without dropping your butt, without getting that little bit of butt wink and that lumbar spine starting to rotate and actually get into more of a flexion, or preventing it from getting into that hyperextension as well. But turning it into a game with them of, well, I'm going to do this, and this is how you better be able to catch up with me, and you better be able to do this with me.
So the reason we use the ball, I've seen some other people do it, is just holding something in between, because that gives them that feedback of whether or not their knees are bowing out or wobbling, because mm-hmm. they do wobble. And so if they're holding that there, that's the reason we do it. And I'm not saying that no, you're wrong or that I'm right, but that's why we have done it. And so if they were to use the band, if I was to use the band, now maybe I'm just completely wrong, but when I squat, my knees, they should go straight up and down. They should go straight with my toe. They shouldn't bow out. They shouldn't turn out. And the reason that I understand that it's like that is if you're putting more weight on one side or the other, or if you're turning outward, then you're putting more pressure on that meniscus, that lateral meniscus, making it less distributed, more concentrated, more likely to tear. Now, again, I'm not in any way an expert. And in the beginning, when you were talking about talking the language of the coaches, well, that's easy because I'm not smart enough to talk the language of the doctors. So,
no, and that's completely understandable. And that is a great, that's how I used it for years. I used a ball for years. We're going to do wall squats and we're going to sit and we're going to make sure those knees are in that position. But more of what you're seeing now in what some of the research does say about that knee position is that not so much out over the foot, way out over the foot. You see some of these, like the some of the people putting these like extremely externally rotated and getting feet straight ahead and knees way out. And I mean, that is, you know, that's a way to squat, and that's a movement, and that's actually utilizing a hip movement. That's actually to prevent hip issues, because when you turn your feet out, what you're doing is you're opening that femur up so that it can work there in the hip. Well, by taking the position that you're in with those feet straight ahead and kind of externally rotating the knee, it turns on the glute, it opens up that into that same position, so you're not getting into that impingement position. So you're not extremely externally rotated either, but you're not in a position that you're going to put somebody in a potentially issue for a meniscal tear or for an injury like that. And you can see that because there are now people breaking massive records, squat records, world records in that position by using that technique now. And it's kind of new. It's kind of upcoming. It's kind of gotten out of the powerlifting and that world and the kind of somewhat of the PT world as well. But that movement world of trying to protect your body, trying to protect the hip, trying to protect that area. But again, this isn't a squat in or out or do's or don'ts, but that's where I see being able to assess these movements, and being able to, how I assess mine is different than how you're going to assess, which is different than every athletic trainer is going to assess it. We just need to do it and get more education on each way that we do it, and find different ways of, hey, would this work? Hey, can I potentially teach my athlete this? Hey, is this a better way than allowing them to be in an externally rotated foot and dropping a knee in and dropping a knee down into a vulnerable position and keeping and potentially causing injury? and putting them into a position where now they are no longer able to stick their foot in the ground on a football field or on a soccer field without getting that valgus drop or without getting that pronation movement. But just getting ourselves out and putting us into these different positions of doing movement.
All right, so again, I talked about the bench press. In January, I wrote down I wanted to be able to bench press one time 300 pounds before spring break, which we just got back from spring break, so first week back. I hit that 2 weeks before spring break. And so I use the SMART principle for writing down that goal. And I think that's really good. Dave Ramsey talks about people who write down their goals and look at them often are the ones who achieve them, right? And so if you take a well-written goal of, hey, I'm going to squat five times every day, or I'm going to get my 10,000 steps in, or I'm going to work out three times a week, or if it's going to be that couch to 5K app, whatever it is. So the SMART principle is the specific, measurable, attainable, realistic, and time-bound. And again, in the show notes, I have two links to those. It gives some examples. But in my goal, I wrote, I want to be able to bench press one rep max 300 pounds before spring break. So it's specific. It's measurable. Yes, did I do it or not? Attainable. Yes, because I was already kind of close. Realistic. Why not? And then time bound before spring break. So that's why I was able to attain it, because every time I worked out, I thought about that goal that I was shooting for. And so again, if you're struggling for motivation for why or whatever to move or whatever, write down your goal and put it out there where you can see it every day, or, you know, as your screensaver on your phone, or just a little sticky on your computer, because every time you look up and see that, you'll remember that's my goal for my fitness, for myself, learning how to move. So, again, talking about the Topgolf, I am in no way an expert in golf, but I feel just doing it, I learn a lot. You know, I was like, man, I'm going to be sore tomorrow, you know, because of the rotation of my trunk where I normally don't rotate like that. But, you know, if I'm playing baseball with my kid, I'm going to be rotating. If I'm throwing a football with my kid, which they're starting to get to that age where I'm going to need to be able to do that, then I need to be able to rotate like that. So if I just stay stiff sitting in this chair doing all my amazing podcasting stuff, sportsmedicinebroadcast.com is awesome, then I'm going to be stiff and I won't be able to move. But just getting out there and doing that, going riding a bike, taking them for walks, those kind of things, those are important. And just like you said, I can't really see it until I've done it. I mean, I can see it, but I can't really understand it until I've done it. Honestly, until I've torn my ACL, I don't really know what it feels like to rehab from an ACL, to have the muscles unable to work, to have that instability. But I'm not going to volunteer to do that. But I can do the work with them, do the squats with them, and feel, oh, wait, my knees wobbled. Oh, my butt winked, right? I should probably put the bands on because I feel like it's more controlled or more stable whenever I have those bands, the monster walk bands, whatever you want to call them, keeping me from... what's it called? Inversion, inversion. When the knees go in,
knee valgus.
There you go, knee valgus. And so, just moving, like Sean said. So again, I would recommend writing down the goals, whatever your goal is for movement, but do something to improve your life in general.
Set a goal. Set a goal for what you want to do too. I mean, us as what we do and what we are, we need an outlet. And there's too many people that their outlet, like I said earlier, we're all athletes and we have to be athletes. We have to run out onto the field. We have to move. We have to be able to teach somebody to do something. There's too many people in our profession that, and not saying anything bad, but that just can't move, that just have lost that ability to move. We've all lost the ability to move somewhat, and from the smallest baby, when they can move and are flexible and get into a perfect squat position and are able to stay in that squat position for hours on end, and we can't even get to it, we've all lost that ability to move. But we have to understand that for us to educate, for us to be able to do these things, for us to do better, we have to get a goal. We have to get a concept. And just as a healthcare provider, we have to be healthy. We have to do something. So I like to tell people, get out and sign up for something, whether it be a mud run, whether it be a Warrior Dash, Navy SEAL Challenge, or whatever those are.
Or just a kayaking class.
Or a kayaking class, or a weightlifting competition, or a strongman competition, or a CrossFit competition, or going down and saying, four times a week, I'm going to do yoga at wherever, at a hot yoga place. And doing it, learning a little bit of something from that, whether that be how to squat or how to move or just how yoga can help you as a healthcare provider, because you're going to have athletes that are going to come up to you and say, have you ever tried yoga? Do you think it would help me? Because I can promise you, I've had hundreds of athletes that have said, hey, what do you think about yoga? What do you think about cryotherapy? What do you think about all of these different things? Hence why the other day I went to and did cryotherapy. I'm trying something new. I'm doing something that I know I've been asked and I had no idea about. And that's something that we need to do. So get out and do those things. Plus, you might find something that you really enjoy and are going to help us in the long run as being healthy. Cardiovascular health, you know, strength, the ability that ability to kind of be an athlete. And if the world shut down and, you know, it's a zombie apocalypse, we're going to be able to fight and get away from people if necessary, because we're in that athletic population. There's no reason that we shouldn't be athletic and that we shouldn't learn to move and be better and be able to help our athletes better.
On that similar note, the reason I use foam roller, the number one treatment we had people sign in the athletic training room was for foam rolling. And so we have them sign in and they grab the roller, just that way we can account for them being there. We know the value model showing, hey, the kids are coming to us. The kids are, you know, less injured because of this, because they're doing this treatment. And so that's the number one thing they do. And the number one reason I do the foam rolling was because I went to Arasti and they said, hey, here's how to use the foam roller. And I saw personal results because I learned to move. I learned to do something that I wasn't doing. And I saw, hey, this really does work. And so, again, just trying it, giving it a shot. And I went to a chiropractor because I said, hey, we'd like to be part of your sports medicine team or whatever. And I went to them and I was every time I left, I was in more pain. And I just felt like it was, okay, he really said, all right, well, let's sign you up for 10 more treatments at this cost if you're paying cash. I'm like, no, that's not what I came here for. That's, you know, and so just trying it, giving a shot. And if it doesn't work, well, like Sean said at the beginning, you get to reevaluate and see if it's something you're doing wrong or you need to change a little bit, but then you begin to feel and understand a little bit better what your athletes are going through.
I'll admit there's been and the time issue, I know people are going to say, I've got too many time commitments. I've got too many time commitments. And I can promise you that I've signed up for my first triathlon. I've signed up for a Highland Games. I signed up for a mud run that I didn't get to do because of our busy schedule. And you know what? That kind of stunk.
Are you wearing a kilt?
I was going to. I was going to wear an awesome kilt and do great things. That's a completely another story, because I was planning, I was actually going to maybe do one this year too, but yeah, we won't get into that.
Yeah, go ahead.
But I wasn't able to because it got moved to a Saturday practice game. Or a Saturday practice. One of our spring practices got moved to a Saturday practice. My triathlon I signed up for, I completely trained all the way up until till about 2 or 3 weeks before it. And then all of a sudden, one of our practices got canceled because of weather. So we had to push to a Saturday practice, which, you know, that happens. I have no hard feelings about it because I got something out of that training. I can now talk to my swimming athlete about training in swimming. I can now talk to my runner about training and running. As much as I hate to run, I lift weights. I do cross training type movements. I do that type of movements. I hate to run, but I can now talk to them about what it was like training to run and training to move, or just adjusting my training and to understand what they're doing, to understand the what they're putting into it. And guess what? In the long run, it made me better. Because it made me healthier. It made me able to do things. I did not injure myself because I'm very smart and am a certified athletic trainer and know that I'm not going to allow myself to hurt myself. And if I do, I'm going to cut it back. I'm not going to quit. I'm going to allow myself to do it in a smart manner. And that's what I did. And excuse me, I will admit that there's been plenty of times that that stuff has happened to myself personally. And that's going to happen to us as athletic trainers. But the gist of it is that we need to do it. We need to try it, and we'll enjoy it. You're getting ready to bench three wheels, right? And it's going to happen. How excited are you going to be? And how excited is your probably your football player is going to be? And they're going to be like, holy crap, the athletic trainer benches more than I do. That's the case. That's going to be, holy cow, the athletic trainer moves really well. Their squat looks better than mine does. You know, these are the things that we should be striving for. They train in this. They do this. They know what we're going through. They know what we're talking about. You should listen to them. You know, it sells us as a profession as well, because we understand what they're coming from, because we not only understand it from our great educational background, our experiences in the field, but also because they see now that we also are doing what they're doing. Even though we might have been college athletes or high school athletes or just watched athletics, we understand.
And one thing that I'm really passionate about is, more than athletic training, is my family. And so whenever my boys come up to the weight room with me, they usually build an obstacle course. We actually took all the foam rollers and spaced them out about a foot and a half and then put them on one of the football tackling dummies, and I pushed them across, and they literally rolled across the whole entire weight room on, you know, roller to roller to roller, like they say the pyramids or whatever. Anyways, but they're up there with me. They're seeing me lift weights. They ride bikes with me. They, you know, we're out in the backyard building a fort, and I'm, you know, screwing boards to a tree yesterday so that they can climb the tree because we're moving. And so if you're saying family time is a reason that you can't work out, well, then find a way to have them do it with you. Go for a walk around your neighborhood. Take them to the park. We go to what we call Zipline Park because it's this little swing that is just like a zip line. So I get to push them on that while I'm having to rotate and move and, you know, engage my core, that kind of stuff. But we're not just sitting, and, you know, find a way to move. And heck, while you're pushing your kid in the swing, you could do a squat in between every other one or whatever it is. Find something, some way to be active. So
you will never have, that's awesome that you guys do that and get outside. And I know you guys do a lot of the geocaching as mm-hmm. well. And so, I mean, that's huge. That's hiking, and that's getting out, and that's being active, and it's staying away from TV and video games and stuff like that. But you'll never, ever kick yourself for one, having time with your kids. I mean, obviously I don't have children, but I know that that will be the case. But also teaching your kids to move properly, because that's something that they're going to have the rest of their life. And that's also something that they're going to take into high school when your boys start playing football or playing soccer or playing whatever. They're now going to understand their body. They're going to understand the move. They're going to understand what you do in a weight room. They're going to understand how to not get hurt in a weight room. And they're going to not get hurt. They're going to be protected. They're going to be a better mover because of it, because of all of that time that you've put in and you guys have done in that weight room.
Last night, my oldest son came in saying his leg was hurting. And so he knows that I've used the foam roller before. And so he wanted... So what ended up happening is I lay him down and I use the roller that I have, and then I roll out like his calf and his shin, and then he feels better because he's seen me do it and he's learning, you know, I think it's growing pains and maybe just soreness from climbing up on the tree or whatever. But we end up doing that because he sees me doing it and he's learning not to just sit still, and if something's hurting, there's something wrong, and to do something about it. So I think he's seeing the example because I am doing it. Now, I kind of want to bring it to a close here in saying that you don't have to be in the same shape as your athletes, but being in shape, I think, is important, as we've said. And maybe you're, you know, a 60, 70-year-old athletic trainer. I don't expect you to be in there bench pressing 300 pounds or squatting 500 pounds, whatever it is. But you could still walk around, move, be able to squat properly, which, again, prevents some of the problems that you have in old age if you continue to lift weights of some sort, even if it's body weight. So
what's the one thing that you have to do every day? You have to go to the bathroom, right? That's a squat.
There you go.
So being able to do daily activity, activities of daily life is huge.
All right. Any parting thoughts there?
Get out, sign up for something, do something, move, learn something. I'm sure that at NATA there will be a bunch of movement. There usually is. There's some good ones. NSCA, the Texas conference, I know, is on the 29th of April. That's a good conference that athletic trainers can go to, and they do a lot of movement and stuff there. The National NSCA conference is out in Las Vegas every year. They do a lot of stuff out there as well. That Perform Better conference, I know, is always a great conference, but get out and do stuff. Get out and learn, educate yourself on better movement patterns and how to move better and how to help your athletes be better athletes. And like you said, I'm not no way trying to say we're supposed to be in the shape of the athletes, but I will say that you're going to learn a lot and you're going to feel a lot and you're going to have a better understanding from it.
All right. One of the athletic trainers that said that they enjoyed listening to the podcast, Vidal Mora, he just wanted to thank me there publicly on Twitter. So Vidal, thanks. I know you're going to be listening to this eventually, and I look forward to sharing the listener spotlight with you coming up in May. A lot of athletic trainers listen to podcasts. My buddy Justin, he's been on here before. He said he's got a newfound appreciation for working out because he listens to podcasts. He's like, oh yeah, I'm gonna go to the gym just so I can listen to my podcast. So this is a great opportunity. Take this, go and move, go to the gym, go walk around. Bill does that some. He'll put in his headphones, go walk around the school during one of our conference periods. So just finding some way to move. sportsmedicinebroadcast.com/learningtomove is this episode. And don't forget to check out School Health. They're giving away stuff during National Athletic Training Month via the podcast. They're giving away a gift certificate every other month. So it's up to a $100 gift card you can win to School Health. Make sure you register again and again and again for a chance to win. So each time that we send out a deal, make sure you register there with the schoolhealth.com. Looking forward to my new solar panel from Frio Hydration. Running out of battery in the middle of football practice, track meet, junior high, cross country meet that's at the city park. So you're not even at your own facility. I'm really looking forward to not running out of battery power at that thing. So Frio Hydration has got some really good innovations, and I can't wait to get that solar panel hooked up and installed. My boy Sean Reedy is going to be bringing some more rodeo sports medicine and some of the different manual therapy classes he's going to. He's going to be bringing those back to the podcast as well. So Sean, I know we've mentioned it many times before. Most of the social media, you're Sean Reedy _ATC.
That is correct. And that is Twitter and Instagram.
Twitter and Instagram, Sean Reedy.
And some of those Instagram, you can maybe find some of my crazy movement, stupid movement patterns and things I know that you comment on about my short shorts and stuff like that.
And again, Reedy is spelled like ready. So Sean Reedy _ATC. And I am Mr. Jeremy Jackson on Twitter. So one thing you did talk about, we talked about technology, and there was like some little sensor. I think it's like Coach X or something
Compex.
Like that. Compex. And that's the thing where you stick it to your leg and it senses.
Compex is a stem unit. You can use it for recovery. You can use it for training. What actually I was using it for in that video with the short shorts was basically an eccentric loaded squat. So in a front squat. So I was loaded in a front squat, eccentrically loading. And then as I'm in that eccentric position or in that eccentric load, the unit is firing. So it's actually getting greater firing of my quad. And as it starts to relax, I come out of my squat. So slow eccentrics down while it's firing. And then I fire out of it. It gives me about a 20 second rest period where it actually like massages, and then I would do another squat. So it's a great tool for, and there's different ones. There's a Power Dot that you can actually run off of your cell phone. Very cool technology. There are some different ones now that I think Chattanooga actually just came out with one, But they're wireless. You can use them on your rehab athletes. You can use them for just stim. You can use them for decrease in swelling. You can help with pain modulation. You can help all of these things, but also then hit it with strengthening. And that strengthening aspect is really cool for me because I can turn on a muscle that might not be working. And that was what I was using in that video. So it's a cool tool.
All right. So you can check him out at Sean Reddy, or Reedy, as he says it, _ETC. And it is National Athletic Training Month when we're recording this, so I don't want to miss an opportunity to thank an athletic trainer. I'm going to start. Sean, you're up next. David Wilkinson, he is pretty involved in GHATS, works for Memorial Hermann now, but he worked at Pasadena ISD for a couple years, and he was very instrumental in getting the athletic trainers out of the academic classroom. I taught biology for 3 or 4 years. I taught 4 classes of biology and then came down to do the athletic training stuff, and Bill taught math for three classes and then came down to did athletic training stuff. And he did that for like 30 years. David Wilkinson was really good at, he gathered all the information. He talked to the right people and got the school board to agree to get us out of the classroom and let us do athletic training and teach only sports medicine. So David, thanks for, not being lazy, not just sitting back there in the district athletic training office and doing nothing. But you're really looking out for us as a group, and I'm glad that you've moved on to something else, something different that's good for you and your family. So, David, thank you.
I want to thank Jason Carlick. He's now head athletic trainer at Texas State. He was the guy that kind of I leaned on when I was a graduate assistant there, and I know our first one in March, I think David Gish, who obviously is no longer with us, but he was the head athletic trainer at that time at Texas State. But Jason worked under David, but Jason was my guy that, you know, when I had a problem with baseball or had a problem with something going on, he was my guy I went to, and he was kind of my mentor there and guided me and helped me. And he's still somebody that I contact quite a bit and ask if I have questions or if I have a problem. And the other day since I've been running back and forth to some rodeos, I swung in there and got to see him. But somebody that I definitely thank a lot for what he's done for me as a professional, as well as the athletic training profession.
So when this is released, it'll be after March. But again, happy National Athletic Training Month. Hopefully you made a difference somewhere in your setting to one athlete, to the community, whether it's going to a school board meeting or something like that, making a difference. Celebrate and promote what we do as athletic trainers, as a profession. And again, thanks for celebrating with me and on the podcast as we've reached over 200,000 total downloads in about 3.5 years of the Sports Medicine Broadcast. And that is a wrap.